This call is being recorded.
We will record the chat transcript and the audio as well. So if anybody missed the meeting, we can share that out with them. My name is Cable Green. I'm the Director of Open Education at Creative Commons. Creative Commons is a global nonprofit. We build and steward the open copyright licenses that the world uses to share everything from educational resources to scientific literature to data around climate change. When people want to share something, they use CC's licenses and public domain tools. And so happy to answer more questions about that later, but that's not primarily why we're here today. You probably all got the invite letter. Creative Commons has been talking with lots of different entities, including World Possible and several of you that are on this call, for years now about the importance of open educational resources for offline communities. As we all know, there are communities all over the planet that do not have, in some cases, any internet access, or they have spotty internet access, or lack of regular electricity service, all sorts of digital divide issues, which don't make it possible for them to regularly access open education through the web. And so there have, for years now, been several amazing projects that have purposefully taken OER and moved them into offline use. World Possible recently contacted CC several months ago and wanted to have a more robust conversation about this with all of you and talk a bit about more about how we can work with the big OER providers out there, the projects that are producing the new content. And whereas today they're primarily producing their works for online consumption, what sort of design practices, tools or documentation, professional development might be useful to them as they are producing their OER so that it's not just designed for online use, but it's also simultaneously designed for offline use. And so that was where the conversation started. We're going to go into more detail today. I want to really have a robust conversation with all of you and talk about what some next steps might look like. Before we do that, though, I just want to do a quick round of introductions, and I'll just call on people so we're not stepping on each other. Let me ask Jeremy to go first, and then I'll just call on people. So it'll be Jeremy, and then Roberta, and then Chrissy will be the next three.
Great. Thanks, Cable. I appreciate that. Yeah, this is Jeremy Schwartz. I'm the executive director of World Possible. You know, we've been producing the Rachel server and a collection of offline OER content, open educational resources content, for use in offline scenarios. I'm really thrilled to see a lot of the familiar faces on this call, and also some names I don't recognize. So hopefully we can do some quick introductions and we can make this worthwhile for everyone.
All right, thanks, Jeremy. Roberta, Thompson, you're up.
Yes, hi. I'm Roberta. I live in Montreal, Quebec, and I'm affiliated with the 60 Million Girls organization. I'm part of their research and development team, and we've been using the Rachel, or people who have been related to us have been using the Rachel for educational situations in Sierra Leone, Guatemala, and a few other places. So I'm here to find out as much as I can. Thanks.
Thank you. And Chrissy Vail from Salt Lake City.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Awesome. All right. First of all, I work with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, if you're familiar with that organization. We are in about 183 countries, countries throughout the world. And right now, we have been piloting a way to help youth in less developed countries to help them succeed in school. And so we've been running after school programs that they come to, and we give them support for math, language arts, study skills, exam prep skills. And in two of our locations, Vanuatu and in Ghana, we have been using the Rachel. And so far, it has been really great. We met with Mustafa, who is in your chapter in Ghana, and he actually came to one of our locations and trained about 12 of our different leaders on how to use the Rachel, and they're really excited about it in Ghana. And then I have a coworker who just left yesterday, and he's headed out to Vanuatu in Papua New Guinea, and he's meeting with Lasso, which I think is a volunteer of yours, and going to kind of work with him on how to train some of the people in the area on how to use the Rachel as well. So far, it's been going really well for all the youth throughout these different areas.
Thanks, Chrissy. Next three will be Frank from Newburgh, Oregon, and then we'll go to Ness from Toronto, Ontario, and then Glenn Brown from British Columbia.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I'm Frank Martin. I work with World Possible, with Jeremy Schwartz, with the education in correctional facilities, and we're in a number of states, probably around 12 right now. We use Rachel and also offline computers, and we also give advice and helping aid to our friends in Latin America and the Caribbean, and it's very exciting. We've been deploying for around 3 years now, and I look forward to learning more about what you have in store with Creative Commons and use within facilities.
Thanks, Frank. Ness, we have a Ness from Toronto.
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Perfect. So I'm here also with my colleague Bogdan, and we're from the Rumi Initiative. And Rumi is all about bringing online learning to offline communities. And we do that with open sourced resources. So we're really excited to be a part of this group and learning a little bit more today.
Great. Thank you. We, Ness, I think you mentioned you've got some weird white noise. We heard that when you were talking as well. So maybe you might want to disconnect and connect back and see if you can get a clean connection.
Ah, okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. Glenn from British Columbia, you're up.
Yeah, I'm with the Rotary Club of Port Moody, which is just outside of Vancouver. And so with Rotary, we've been engaged in Africa for some time. A couple of clubs I'm involved with has deployed Rachel in parts of Kenya, but most recently we've been in Belize, where we've got two Rachel units in the Belize Central Prison. We're actually looking at expanding that, and also looking at the deployment of Belize in a school in Belize City.
Great, thanks, Glenn. For the next three, let's go Liz from San Diego, and then Steve from Glendale, California. And then we'll go with Ray from Port Angeles, Washington.
Hi, everyone. This is Liz. I'm from Learning Equality, based in San Diego. We're a tech nonprofit, and I'm joined here by Shivi, my colleague, who specializes in curriculum. You might know of us by our products. We are the creators of KA Light and Calibri. So K-Lite has been on one of the platforms supported by Rachel and World Possible for years now, and more recently adding in Calibri. We had a really lovely co-hacking session with them last week. And we, beyond supporting the use of OER in offline settings, we think about the tooling within our software, which help educators use that OER in ways that really build up their teaching skills in offline settings. We also work on making sure that OER is alignable to curricular standards and other relevant needs. So, you know, in our line of work, we really fit in with a lot of the other initiatives that exist, focusing on the hardware piece and or building up infrastructures or world chapters. So it's been lovely being a part of this community, and excited to share more of what we've learned over the last years.
Hi, this is Steve Bashford. I work with Jeremy Schwartz at World Possible in Irvine, California.
Senior Director of Engineering. So I work on the hardware platform that hosts the content that we're developing. Over the last 4 or 5 months, we've developed some powerful test diagnostics for manufacturing to ensure the quality and reliability of those hardware platforms. And I also work on building some of the content that is installed onto the platform, different types of software, and also different types of modules as well.
Hi, good morning. This is Ray Pulsifer, and I work for Washington State, and we are working on setting up prison education platforms. And we primarily work with Canvas. Rachel is one of the things that we've pulled in. Conline is one of the things we pulled in. And our goal is to make things work in a prison platform where there's an air-gap firewall. The other thing we're working on is a laptop that inmates can sync in education and then take back to the unit so that they can work completely offline and sync up with Canvas. And one of the reasons I'm here is because we're trying to start collecting our Canvas curriculum that's been converted for offline use that works in a prison. So I'm very interested in the whole idea of sharing information in repositories and such. So thank you.
Hey, thanks, Ray. This is Cable. I actually live in Olympia, Washington, just down the road from you. And I used to work for the State Board for Community Technical Colleges in the state. And one of my colleagues at the community college in Port Angeles is big into offline OER for prison educations as well. And if you'd like a connection, I'd be happy to make that for you. Okay, it looks like, who are we still missing? Let's go, next up, we'll go Chevy, and then Jeff in Chicago, and Tim in Chehalis.
Hi everyone, I'm Chevy. I'm Liz's colleague from Learning Equality, and I work on our content and curriculum strategy. Right now, we're really focused on bringing OER to a variety of populations, including especially refugee groups, and on working on the alignment of OER to various types of national curricula through various initiatives and partnerships with different ministries and on-the-ground communities, which are interested in increasing their usability. So we're really excited to be here with our friends, Creative Commons and World Possible, and to hear from all of you.
This is Jeff Gumas. I'm based out of Chicago, Illinois, and have a sort of newish nonprofit organization called Crowded Learning, and we're heavily focused in the adult basic education world and sort of figuring out ways to do alignment work with both open and just freely available content that's out there, and aligning it to the adult ed standards frameworks and figuring out ways to organize those so that they're just more more granular and skill-based, so that folks can actually identify a resource or a set of resources they might want to use, specific skills that they want to teach or provide options for learners, and be able to deliver those more streamlined as opposed to hopping into various different platforms. So serving kind of as a content aggregator of sorts of various types of resources. And I'm excited to learn about what's going on, obviously, in adult education, the corrections education system is a huge part of that, and we get a lot of questions on what's going on in this space and corrections. So I'm excited to hear what's happening, and I've already heard some interesting things from folks that have already introduced themselves.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tim Tuohy. I'm principal at Green Hill School in Chehalis, Washington. And I've been working with Frank with the Endless platform for a few years now. We have about 40 laptops deployed right now amongst our student population for various school and other related work.
All right. Thanks, everybody. I learned a lot, so I really appreciate that. Did we miss anybody? Anybody not get to introduce themselves? If so, please open your mic and jump in. Okay. Well, with that, let me just say about three more sentences, then I'm going to turn it over to Jeremy to lead us forward. Creative Commons' role in this is really to support all of you. We, Creative Commons, has a group we call the Open Education Platform at CC. If you're not a member of it, you're welcome to join. It's free. There's no membership fees. Just type in Creative Commons Open Education Platform on the web and you'll find it. This is about 900 people from 75 countries around the world that are working together on international open education projects. We're about to start launching nominations for those projects soon. I bring that up because when that group was creating its goals, using open education to reach out to groups that don't have an equal shot at educational resources are going to struggle to get to the goals in the United Nations Sustainable Development Goal number 4 was one of the target audiences that that platform and the members of it want to work with. And so offline OER and design for offline OER is going to be a big part of that. So Creative Commons is very interested in this topic. We are not the technical experts. We're not the design experts. But what we can certainly bring to the game is sharing the best practices, advertising your good work, holding up your organizations so others know what you're doing. And so, you know, being a really good cheerleader and advertiser and communicator is where I think we play best and can be the most supportive. With that, let me turn it over to Jeremy.
Thanks, Gable. Yeah, so I'm going to spend a couple of minutes. We're an intimate group, and so to the extent that people, you know, have a question or a comment or want to plug in, you know, I hope people feel comfortable just interrupting me. And I know there's a bit of a delay between unmuting and speaking, but just go ahead and interrupt, and I think it'll make for a better conversation for the group as a whole. To give a little context on what we're trying to get to, you know, we have been deploying what we call Rachel, and it sounds like everyone's familiar with it, for almost 11 years now. And the themes that continue to come up when we deploy this resource is the need for content to be, you know, locally relevant, highly curated, and really available in its full form offline. And so as part of that work, we have tried to develop a repository that we are calling OER2Go.org, and that stands for Open Educational Resources. And then the number 2, Go, is, you know, defining the fact that we may need to take these things and download them and carry them with us to remote locations where there is no other internet connectivity. So as we've gone about trying to grow this repository of content at OER2Go, you know, all of the work, for the most part, is being done by the technical team at World Possible and some great volunteers and other community members of going out and making copies of websites. And right now that takes us anywhere from, you know, 2 to 8 weeks to make a copy of a website. And so the hope has been that instead of us trying to do this work manually, we can engage content providers directly and have them make a offline copy of their website available. And when that's not done directly by the content providers, we can engage a lot of the community here to help make those sets of contents available themselves. And with that in mind, we'd be growing the library of content, which is available for everyone and for anyone, and really anyone, meaning people who are totally offline. And we wanted to talk about some ways in which, you know, we could make that happen and get some feedback and say, you know, is this the right path to go down? Or, you know, are there other alternatives? Or is this something that we need to continue kind of doing in-house? And so with that in mind, I don't, you know, right now for folks who have a Rachel device, when you go into the administrator panel and you add content to a Rachel device, What you're actually doing is the Rachel device is talking to oertogo.org. It's viewing all of the content there, and then it pretty nicely integrates that content when you download it. So the repository of content now is about 4 terabytes in size. Most Rachel devices can host, you know, about 20 or 25% of that content. And so the more we can customize content and make other content available, the more relevant that content will be when you actually deploy it, whether it's, you know, Vanuatu or a prison facility in Washington. And so I think we wanted to present some options and see if the community, if you folks found these tools to be useful, you know, should we go about developing them, or should we really be focused on engaging content providers directly and explaining to them some of the technical challenges with taking their website offline or some of the design practices they should use in order for us to make it easier to take their content offline. So I might present a couple of options here that we would consider tools for the community to use, and then get some feedback if you guys are willing to provide it on if you would, you know, use any of these tools. And if not, you know, I think that we're going to focus the conversation a little more on what are some recommendations and best practices we can give to the major content providers so that they can make offline copies of their websites available. And ultimately, you know, we'll probably pursue some form of both. So getting your feedback on what the right tools would be to help make content packages, I think would be super helpful if that sounds okay. I'll take a couple of seconds here. If anyone has any questions on that, I do see some comments coming in on the chat, and that's great. Please feel free to continue to use that. So wonderful. So I'm going to suggest, you know, a couple of things that we could do, which would allow the community to create more content and put it on OER2Go. The first thing that we have talked about kind of at length is that a lot of folks will say, you know, I have a collection of PDFs or a collection of videos that I would like to make available on my offline learning system. And I'm just going to, you know, say Rachel for this this discussion, you know, how do I get my own module created on Rachel? And that's a question we get quite a bit. And the answer to it is really, it's a basic HTML task, but for someone who's never used HTML, that's a daunting task. And so what we have considered doing is putting together some standard templates, and those templates would basically ingest your content. So you would either create a Google Drive of videos and PDFs, and then we would take that and we would have an automated system that would then create HTML and a module out of it. And this isn't all that complicated to build. When we did it, you would have a choice of a couple of different formats that would say, you know, each video or PDF has a one page surrounding it. And in that page, you would put in a title and you'd be responsible for providing a description and some basic, what we call metadata, but it's just, you know, classification data for a user to understand what they're getting at. And then, you know, a day or two later, out would pop a module, which then we could either host on OER2Go, or you could use it directly in your deployments. And if that type of system sounds interesting, I would love to hear from some of the users about what that looks like, and if that is in demand at all. So I don't know if anyone wants to speak up or maybe, you know, put something in the chat, but I would love to get some feedback on that type of system.
I think it'll be used quite a bit, Jeremy, especially a template form. There are several programs, especially in prison education, that would like to share just from the conversations I've had. But I like the idea of connect the dots and the simplicity. There would be definitely contributions that way. I think it's a good idea.
Great. And then Roberta, and I think I saw Ray post in the chat, but I lost you guys already. Do you guys mind maybe providing some feedback on a system like that?
Hi. This is Roberta. Yes, well, from what I understand, it sounds like it would be very helpful for us because we're always looking for new content, you know, that will suit their requirements of what we're looking for. And it's often a, you know, a battle to find stuff that's available offline. So, you know, anything that would support us in being able to do that. And from what you've described, it sounds, you know, fairly user-friendly. I think it would be very useful, you know, just as long as whatever we find, you know, is passes the Creative Commons, you know, credentials. That makes sense if I'm understanding correctly. I'm relatively new to the 60 Million Girls.
So on our end, we're doing mostly Canvas because we're trying to do the interactive instruction hybrid classes. Hopefully we'll be moving to a point where I'll have a secure internet link and we can actually maybe teach remote. So we're looking primarily at OER content that'll go into a Canvas shell. And so on our approach right now is building tools that will help to auto relink, you know, find pictures that are linked elsewhere, auto pull videos and such, and relink them locally. That's the approach we're going. But I think one of our biggest hangups is number one, the time, because it can be very tedious to go find all the pictures or what have you and relink them. And then number two, you mentioned that it can be daunting with the HTML. You know, simple link changes can be daunting, especially if the teacher is not real up on the, you know, on the web. You know, if they've never touched an HTML tag before. So we're going from the approach of let's build them tools to help automate that as much as possible. Our tools right now are specifically designed to bounce off Canvas. But I think that's a big one because, you know, if I wait around for somebody who can come and do that work, a lot of times it'll never get done. But then the question is, you know, how do we host it? Where do we host it? So I do like the idea of a system that will help out. And then you guys have a lot of volunteers. So that's one of those where, you know, like if somebody could pop it in and have the community help out, that would be big. So that's my input. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's super helpful, both. Thank you, Roberta and Ray. So maybe I should have prefaced that we have three kind of ideas for where we invest in next in helping this, I'm going to call it a marketplace for offline content. And just in those two comments, we touched on all three. So, you know, the first one is really specifically this idea that novice users without any HTML experience or any experience as it relates to, you know, scripting or, you know, these more complicated tasks could put together a folder of content, and that content inside it is probably just, you know, audio, podcasts, videos, PDFs, and submit it to us, and out would pop a module. And that module would just be HTML, and it would be a very basic user tool. And Roberta, I think you're right on track when you understand what I'm talking about there. And this type of tool, and Chrissy, I see what you're saying as well, is really valuable for users who are more focused on, you know, the education, the deployment, and that kind of thing, and less on the technical side. And then we have to balance that against, you know, folks like, you know, Ray or your power users or what we do internally of should we focus our time in building these tools or what we call scripts for people who don't know it, but it's basically software, which would enable much more complicated work around bulk editing of a million HTML files at once to remove links to offline content or to different parts of the system. It's more of a, you know, we almost call it like an artificial intelligence for web scraping kind of thing. And the third thing that we've talked about is actually hosting workshops, volunteer-led workshops to do one or both of these.
And so, you know, it's great to hear that there is desire for, it sounds like, all three of these things. And I think we're trying to spend some time and figure out, you know, we are a limited resource environment, and say, you know, which one are we going to use our resources to build and support? And so, you know, we want to make sure that whatever we do is actually going to be able to get used. And so, you know, Ray, if we were to spend a lot of time putting our internal scripts online or on GitHub and some of our internal processes for how we go about making offline content, you know, do we think that there are enough people out there who would understand them and know how to use them? Or are we better off really focusing on this end user who could collect their own sets of content, submit it to us, and out would pop their own module? And that's really a lot of the discussion today, is trying to get feedback on those two alternatives. With that, I don't know, Chris, you had a comment. I don't know if you're willing to pitch in. I see Liz maybe unmuted herself. So if either one of you wanted, Chrissy, go ahead. We'll let Chrissy go first.
Okay. Now, and it's been interesting because we've had the Rachel now for about a year and a half, and it's been great to see a lot of the work that you guys have put into making improvements. For example, having that search option for some of the modules like Wikipedia was huge, because almost all of the areas that we're at, these children, like they don't even know how to turn a computer on, you know, let alone understand what how to find something and navigate. So the ability to customize those folders, like in that teaching, you know, area, that is really helpful for the local area, so they can customize it to the needs that they're wanting. So for example, you might have an area that's needs more help with the English, but another area that's really focused on passing their exams and building those links. And so right now they're not using the tools to customize because it's just way too confusing. Go ahead.
If I can ask like a follow-up, do you think that, you know, would a situation help where you could do the customizing yourself? And would someone, I think you're with the Church of Latter-day Saints, would someone there have a set of resources independent of our resources that you'd like to use? Or would you envision customizing the content that's already on the device? Or if you could just tell me like a little more, like, do you guys have content that you want?
Yeah, probably a little both. So for example, I noticed that you guys added some exams from Papua New Guinea. First of all, the students, the only access they have to exams in a lot of these areas are through their teachers, and they don't get a lot of time to practice. And so being able to have the teachers find these exams and then somehow upload them onto to Rachel so all the students can use them would be great. Some things would be like we would do here in Salt Lake and then send the Rachel out to certain locations. I've had to like take off a bunch of the modules when I send them to locations because it's just too overwhelming. And you know, in Africa they might not need something, in Haiti they might not need that module. So customizing the modules has been okay in the administration portion. It's more so like an area getting it and saying, have them counseling, they'll be able to counsel together and say, we would really like them to improve their English. And I've had to say, here's the top five modules that could help you. But they also have some ideas of what they would like to put on there. And so does that help at all? Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so when you say they have ideas of what they would like to put on there, do you think that that is other websites that they would like to see offline? Or is that stuff that, you know, like what we found in Guatemala is we've gone into some communities where a teacher has this folder of content that they've like kind of been collecting over the years offline. And it's just, you know, it's a bunch of PDFs and some videos, and they find it really effective to teach English there. But we're not getting that content like back to us so that we can redistribute it again. And is that what you're thinking? Like it's that a teacher has got like a set of content in their hands, or is it more that they've got this website that they think would be great?
Both. I've had some people say we love it on there, but they don't understand open like Creative Commons, right? They don't understand that, well, we'd have to pay for that. But I do have some of the teachers who they would like to upload their own videos and documents and exams, but they just, it's really challenging. So having your chapters and those volunteers come and train our local leaders has been huge so far.
Yeah. You know, that's something we're in parallel working on. And, you know, we were really excited that Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation did just give us funding to build, you know, a teacher training program that will sit on Rachel.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So the first module that'll be there now will walk you, any user, through, you know, all the basics of Rachel, give them a tour of the content and, you know, what's valuable for where. But still, I think you really do hit on that content discovery part of things that's very difficult of, you know, there's this massive set of content coming at me and what do I really need to use it for?
And I mean, it would be great if, like, I don't know if this is something that you guys could do on your side, is grouping the modules into content areas would be really helpful. So if a student says, oh, I need help with math, or I need job skills, and they click on it and then it opens up the module list. That would be one way.
Yeah.
Another thing that we really struggle with is any module that has Flash Player is really challenging because it's so expensive to have laptops, but a lot of the students have phones and iPads or tablets. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing that most of the students have used is the keyboarding, because the computer labs, is a lot of, you know, in these areas, they don't, if they have a computer lab in the school, there's like two, and then everyone uses it. So if they can learn those skills, it puts them so ahead in the job market.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, I think that's it. Yeah. If someone else can talk. Sorry, I've taken all the time.
No, we appreciate it. Ray, do you mind if I bounce back to you too and kind of get your feedback on, you know, on the other side of things, if we were to spend time, you know, publicizing, you know, internal scripts and processes and things like that, do you think that that's something that, you know, you guys have technical expertise to leverage, or how you feel about, you know, kind of some of these more advanced tools for bulk scraping of websites?
So on our end, you know, in Washington State, we generally don't have the technical expertise. So in our case, we've got our SMC tool. It started out as basic import and enrollment. So you could like push a spreadsheet up. And the idea there was that I didn't want to sit and create accounts and enroll people in Canvas. And so I set it up so a spreadsheet could be uploaded and it'll do Active Directory integration and Canvas integration and enrollment. And so the office staff can do it. And they're not technical. The next thing we did was set up the SMC to do basically work like offline YouTube. And you get the upload button and you get, you know, put in tags and descriptions. Super simple. It converts it to web format and kicks out a... like an iframe tag, like YouTube does, that the instructor can then copy that and go paste it into the Canvas course. So at our level, anything we're doing is trying to put that front end on. That's a nice point and click with a couple of boxes to fill out. Our conversion tools is going to be the same kind of format where you're going to be able to pick a course and it's going to go through the pages and find all the YouTube links and just auto do it. And it's on the instructor to make sure they're pulling open stuff. And I understand there's ways to check the license on that. So we may get there too, where it'll tell you, you know, what the license for the YouTube video is. But in our case, we have to like wrap it up into really simple point and click interfaces. I'm not giving out actual scripts. I'm giving out a working website.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Most of them aren't going to be able to take a script and run it.
Right. So I think that's, you know, more of an argument for continuing to focus on these, you know, very user interface friendly tools for, you know, aggregating content and creating some modules out of it. Liz, I know you were unmuted for a second there. Liz, do you have anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, thanks for touching back with me. I just wanted to add an aspect of work that Learning Quality has done, which was in response to some of the user feedback we had from around support within a formal classroom setting of differentiated teaching. And what I mean by that is making sure that students are learning the right kind of stuff at the time they need to based on their level. And for a offering classroom of, you know, 30 plus students, that might be a daunting task, but to do so with OER and OER organized within a module that might have, you know, limited design around supporting differentiation was something that we discovered and worked on. And so how we approached that was just creating tooling within our platform, Calibri itself, to support real time, but still offline, assignment of pieces of content within the modules to respond to allow teachers to assign content basically based on how students were actually performing. So this isn't, you know, an intelligent system that's that can exist online with black box algorithms that determine the self-paced and the pathway. It definitely needs a teacher within this ecosystem, but it's a design feature that we definitely focused on because we saw that need within formal classrooms. And so in response to what you were asking in terms of, you know, sharing your roadmap for the HTML5 app creation, I just wonder if there's room in that to support that micro differentiation once something goes offline, once that HTML module gets created.
Yeah, you know, I don't know that we know the answer to that at all yet. I think we're kind of in an exploratory phase of where we take this in order to make it, you know, most useful for users. I think something that we do get questioned a lot, and I think Chrissy touched on this a bit, is can we start providing, you know, some self-directed assessments for students to take? And it, you know, you would log into a Rachel device, and it could even be within, you know, a Calibri type platform, and say, I would like to take a math assessment test here on the device, and then based on my results be presented, you know, some suggestions of where I need to begin my math studies. Is that the kind of thing that you guys are targeting over there?
Yeah, assessments are something that we don't offer right now, but it definitely falls under the umbrella, like the topic, the umbrella topic, right? The way we approach it is that we see what a student uses, like say a student starts with a set of exercises on a particular topic, and based on their performance, then we allow for the teacher to assign lessons and additional quizzes that they curate within a platform offline. So it's not like a full-blown diagnostic from the beginning, it's just a continual assessment based on what's been assigned by the teacher.
Yeah. Very cool. Okay, that's really helpful. Yeah, so that's good to know. You know, I think part of today's topic was to provide some best practices to content creators themselves. And Cable, this probably falls back to your position as a cheerleader for, you know, this offline movement of OER. And there are some, you know, more general pieces of advice that we can provide to content providers, though I'm not sure that this forum makes a ton of sense. But, you know, we heard about Flash, which is obviously a big problem for users around the world. You know, we also have some certain issues when we go about making offline copies of websites, depending on, you know, relative linking and linking to outside content sources, as well as some of the underlying technologies which can drive websites, you know, that we would recommend. And I'm starting to think about, you know, some closing paths forward that we would like to take. I think with, you know, Creative Commons support, as well as some of the user feedback here, is, you know, I think we would like to pursue some of these templates, which would automate HTML builds of content, you know, to help customize content. I think we'd also like to revisit how we display content on Rachel's front page. For a while, and I don't remember who mentioned it, we did used to categorize content by domain, and we stopped doing that in order to make content a little more flexible, but it's actually probably something that we could reinstitute
And it sounds like there might be some demand for that as well, just to make it a less daunting user interface when you first show up to it. So that's great that someone brought that back up. And then, you know, I think more than us trying to publish some technical scripts and some of this more technical work we do in offlining websites, we might be better off producing a document, maybe with Creative Commons, that provides some general guidelines which make it easier for someone else to go grab a copy of a website. And that will relate to kind of the underlying technologies the HTML is working with, and, you know, some of the .NET frameworks and things that Steve can end up banging his head against the wall when we run into. You know, maybe we can go about talking about how to, you know, provide us an archive of your content or a database that we need, as well as some suggestions that make it easier to eventually understand that half of the world is still offline, and these are some guidelines you should use to make your website compatible, so that when people come to us and say we want that website, we can make that happen. So that's kind of,
Jeremy, that's really exciting to hear. You know, if that's the direction that you think will really boost the ecosystem. I just wanted to share quickly that I recently read something similar in a slightly different industry. So Benetech is a software company based in San Francisco, and they for years have been basically converting digital books to be more accessible for readers with disabilities. And so their business model for a long time was returning hundreds of thousands of books and converting them. But then this year they announced they're working with a publisher, Macmillan, to start at the beginning and making something born disability friendly. And so I was really excited by that. And I could see a similar parallel for offline OER, where something is born offline OER compatible.
Yeah, thanks, Liz. That's, you know, it's good to get the feedback from you guys. I really do appreciate everyone who took the time out to jump on and give us some feedback. Cable, do you think that that's something that's realistic for us? Do you think that there would be, receptive folks at some of the OER community if we were to say, hey, you know, these three or four things would make it a heck of a lot easier for us to offline your website? Or, you know, in parallel to that, you know, can we get in touch with your tech team and get, you know, an archive of your website? And can we talk with you guys about what it is, what it means to offer your website offline? And, you know, would you be willing to let it be hosted on OER2Go? Like, is that a campaign you think that we could run with Creative Commons?
Yeah, I think that is entirely possible. And I liked how you framed it up before by saying, let's, you know, this group of experts and others that you think should be in the conversation is the right group to put together to create a set of general guidelines or a set of best practices. And that's always tricky, right? Because you don't want to make it too technical that people don't understand. You don't want to make it too long that they say, oh my gosh, that's too much and I could never do all that. And so there's a balance in there about how much you think you can give them that they'll actually do. We always have the same challenge with accessibility and inclusive design as well. If you talk with an accessibility director at a university or a community college, they will get very excited when given the opportunity, and they'll give you 15 pages of things to do, when that's just not going to work. And so you have to kind of say, what's the 10 things we should do? And yeah. So I would encourage you to come up with a concise, clear list that's in lay terms that people could actually do. Once you've got that, then yes, I think where Creative Commons can help is on multiple fronts. So with the open education community, absolutely, right? We can reach out, we can convene the big OER providers, we can get the conference presentations, we can get in front of the right groups with the right group from here to make those pitches. Creative Commons can also push this out through our global network. So we have teams in countries around the world that would be interested in this, especially our teams in countries where offline matters a lot. We could put this kind of thing into the Creative Commons certificate. So I'll share the link to this in the chat window. It's just certificates.creativecommons.org. We have a 10-week online course that's all about everything you need to know about open licensing, public domain, fair use rights, how to take these efforts and become an open advocate in as a librarian, as an educator. And so something like this, I could put into that curriculum. And we're teaching, we're running about 8 courses per trimester. So we're touching roughly 600-700 people a year with that course all around the world. We can work this through the IGO partners that we have. So we work very closely with UNESCO right now on a OER recommendation, which is a new UNESCO instrument, which will provide all of UNESCO's member states, which is essentially all the countries in the world, with guidelines on what they can do to support open education in their countries. And we could, it's a little late in the game to change the language in that recommendation, although I will be in Paris on May 27, 28 to help make final adjustments to that document. And so that's an opportunity. But even if we miss the document, governments will be queued up as of 2020 to be ready to get advice on how they can best support open education in their countries. And this could be given to them. We also work with groups like the Global Book Alliance, which is working on early childhood reading materials, and they are in a process to incorporate best publishing practices. This could be another one. I just presented with them last night. We work with policy. So we work with governments around the world at national, state, provincial, and local levels, and with foundations. And we started by just doing open licensing policies. So, for example, if you take a grant from the Hewlett Foundation, they require a Creative Commons attribution license on everything you build. If you take a grant from USAID for, my name's Cable Green. I'm the director of open education at Creative Commons. If you take a grant from USAID to create early childhood reading materials, you have to put a Creative Commons attribution license requirement. So we started with open policy there, but then we started branching into, hey, and you should have strong accessibility requirements, and you should make sure that all of this OER is put in a public repository in a downloadable and editable format. And so as we are helping governments and other funders create good open policy, this is another set of guidelines that we could recommend and provide text for them. So those are just a few of the opportunities where I think CC could be helpful.
Yeah, that's great. And Jeff, I saw you in the chat posting about POR, which I'm not familiar with. Do you want to, we've got a couple minutes left. Do you want to spend a minute or two?
Sure, yeah, let me hop out. I'm at a conference, so I'm kind of like bouncing between rooms. Yeah, it's from the Center for Accessible Materials. AIMCAST is the larger organization. So POR is just a nice set of 4 principles for designing things from the start, really focusing on universal design for learning and making sure that accessibility isn't a retroactive sort of response to having to do it for federal requirements, but putting just smart design in from the start. And what's nice about it is it's just kind of like anything else, even like designing for ESL learners, like instead of looking at it as an add-on, it just tends to be best practices anyway. And in particular for accessibility and thinking about offline use, you know, the more these principles actually go in, probably in many cases, the easier it will be for that resource to be made available offline. So what I like is they also take just all of the frameworks that are out there and guidelines for accessibility, and it puts it in a nice set of 4 principles. So I encourage you to just look at it. When it was said that we need to winnow down all of those accessibility considerations down to 10, POR does a nice job of really kind of doing that already for you.
Great. Taking notes, that's really good to know. Okay, yeah, so that's really good. So I think, we would love to work with, you know, whatever group, and I know, you know, Learning Equality is here, Rumi is here, and there's a few more of the offline content aggregators, Jeff, obviously yourself as well, and put together a, you know, like a 1-page document to run by Cable with some of our recommendations, which will make our lives easier when it comes to helping package content for offline use and helping design from the start so that can be made possible. And then at least we, you know, we can publish something and at least have a working document from which we go from. And, you know, with a Creative Commons seal and cheerleading and all the resources they can bring to bear, you know, we can start saying that there's a set of standards and that this is something that people do care about. And this is a marketplace that still does exist for content, and we shouldn't be ignoring them. So, you know, I think that in conjunction with some of the easier user tools to create some modules very quickly and easily, you know, through a set of folders and a file system that people are familiar with in Windows, you know, that will really kind of push the ball forward. And then maybe some revamp of the Rachel homepage to make content a little more categorized and accessible. You know, those are kind of my three big takeaways. I'm also kind of getting the feeling that publishing a lot of our technical work and technical scripts isn't going to do a lot of good, and that would take quite a few of our resources. So I think that's something that we'll put on the back burner, and is really a helpful outcome for us just to know that as well. So, you know, with that, I would just want to thank everyone for spending an hour with us today. Your feedback is super helpful. I really do appreciate the Creative Commons for, you know, putting their name and seal and putting this group together for us as well. All right, I see some other things coming in through the chat, and we'll catch up with anyone who wants to catch up with us. You know, you know who we are. But I think with that, I want to be respectful of the hour that you guys all gave to us and just tell you how much I appreciate it. And hopefully we can do this again soon.
And hey, Jeremy, can you and I connect?
Yeah, definitely.
I'd like to, you know, we're trying to create the easier button. And I know you guys got a lot of scripts, so it'd be nice to collaborate. So let's just connect later.
Definitely. All right. Thanks, Ray. All right. Thank you, everyone. I really appreciate your time today.